Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start with Phillip Rivers. Sponsored by the Popeye's Chicken Sandwich. I'm hungry. All right, Phillip Rivers is as delusional as everyone else in professional sports. At the age of 38 and coming off arguably his worst season as a professional, Rivers thinks he has two good years left as a starting quarterback. Why not? Tamron Hall is newly married and just had a baby, and I still think I'm in pole position. Mm. Men, we're driven by our delusions of grandeur.
Shoot your shot.
The Chargers finished 5-11 last season. Rivers tossed 20 interceptions and 23 touchdown passes. His 88.5 passer rating was his lowest in 13 years. Yesterday, the Chargers officially dumped him, announcing they would not attempt to re-sign their quarterback of the last 16 years. Rivers immediately announced he'd like to play two more years. The Indianapolis Colts and the Carolina Panthers are the most likely destinations for the past-his-prime quarterback. Neither place makes sense for Rivers. Rivers shouldn't sign with any team that is expecting him to be their full-time starter. That will be a disaster for Rivers and the head coach. Happiness is attached to expectations. If Rivers signs with the Colts or Panthers, expectations will be raised in those cities to levels that won't be remotely easy to reach. You sign a veteran quarterback with borderline Hall of Fame credentials, and fan bases start fantasizing about the playoffs and Super Bowls. At 38 and with no mobility to move in the pocket, Rivers doesn't need the burden of elevated expectations. It's just going to decrease everyone's happiness. It's like the deal I would put on the table for Tamron Hall. I would lower her expectations by letting her know up front, I'm in bed by 9 p.m., I don't like small talk, I really don't want to hear about your problems, and don't question me about my gambling or any suspicious charges on my American Express. Deal? Seriously. My point is, Rivers needs to be looking for a low expectations football relationship. I know the perfect destination. Dallas. Rivers should volunteer to be the backup quarterback in Dallas. Sign with the Cowboys for $6 to $8 million a year to back up Dak Prescott. Rivers has already earned $218 million in the NFL. He's not hurting financially. Money should play no role in how he spends his final 2 years in the league. Rivers could be a hero in Dallas, the perfect insurance policy for Dak's health and attitude. If Dak gets hurt, Rivers could fill in and take over a potential Super Bowl team. If Dak continues to play hardball in contract negotiations, Rivers could end up Dallas's starting quarterback. I know my scenario is highly unlikely, but Phillip Rivers will not live up to expectations in Indianapolis or Carolina. He could exceed expectations in Dallas. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst LeVar Arrington and Brady Papinga. Marcellus, get us rolling. Should Phillip Rivers be looking for a starting job in 2020?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just crazy that we're going to really try and borrow a mindset that is not obviously the mindset that Phillip Rivers used to become Phillip damn Rivers. Let's lower the bar, y'all. Let's just lower the bar so we can just jump over it. And yay, everyone thinks I did something. That's not a competitor. That's not how any of us are built. We want to go out there and find the challenges. The greater challenges, the better. And then we're going to try and accomplish that. And it, what he's suffering from is just trajectory and the issue that statistics have with your trajectory. And I always talk about this to young players. I'm like, look, I know you want to be good. I know you want to be great, but timing matters as well. If you start off on the scene and get 13 sacks your rookie year, ooh, you set yourself up for failure going forward, right? Versus a guy who gets 3, 7, 11, 13. We're looking at him differently versus 13, 11, 7, 3. Same damn dude probably, but we look at you differently. How come Phillip Rivers just didn't have a bad year? Oh, because he's 38 yes. and had a bad year. So the equity you have as Phillip Rivers, who has the second most starts in NFL history at the quarterback position, 224, so he's available, he's durable, and the fact that he's been a borderline, if not Hall of Fame talent, doesn't get to buy him one offseason in terms of still believing in him as a starting quarterback because trajectory matters. You borrow from his birth certificate, applied it to his stats of last year, and say he's done. He's a bum. And to me, that's not how I analyze prospects. I say where you are, not in a relative scope, but in an absolute sense.
I'm going to say this. This last year was not an aberration. I mean, you look since 2015, he failed in quarterbacking 101, which is, okay, first and foremost, you got to take care of the football. He was the worst since 2015 turning over the football. 76 interceptions, 88 giveaways.
That's his second most.
But. Well, you add them together, I'm going to just go for it.
You act like Jameis Winston doesn't play.
I'm telling you right now.
Did Jameis Winston retire?
But let me tell you this. No, I'm going to tell you that the question, he absolutely, like you said, should look for a starting job because his ego will not allow him to take a backup role. There's no way.
And ability.
Okay?
Ego.
But he is no way a starting caliber quarterback. Ooh. So there's only really one place for him to end up. Fishing down in Florida. Catching those bass. Retirement. This guy, I'm telling you, I would not entrust my team, even a young quarterback like Dak Prescott, I know that was brought up, I would not entrust him in that situation. I do not believe he would be there for the right intentions. But the biggest thing is I would not entrust my franchise with him where he's currently at. Because when he was with the Chargers, oh my goodness.
What?
They gave him year after year. Of, okay, that was just an aberration. Oh, that, okay, yeah, you'll do better. And lo and behold, finally they say we got to cut the cord and move on.
A starter is a starter until a starter isn't a start. No more.
Hit the road.
He just got cut. But he's still a starter. He's coming off of a starter's role. I think you look for a starting. So, yes, he still should be looking for a starting job. But here's the caveat. Wherever he ends up going, he should be looking to compete. Even if he was staying in L.A., he should be looking to compete to have that starting role. So regardless of how many times he's turned the ball over or how poor he's played, there are a lot of quarterbacks out here that play substandard style football. He still has the opportunity to actually beat somebody out and be a starter.
Did you listen,
approach it that way?
Did you read what he said yesterday about the parameters he put on continuing to play? He eliminated half the NFL. Can't have a leaky O-line, got to be in contention for a Super
Damn
Bowl.
Right.
Blah, blah. He eliminated more than half of the NFL, and that's why everybody, it's down to two teams.
Who?
Indianapolis and Carolina. And to me, anybody that thinks Phillip Rivers, based off what we saw last year and what we've seen since 2015, Brady didn't even mention the number one thing, 45, the most losses for a starting quarterback since 2015. Anybody looking for that guy to magically show up in Indianapolis with a new personnel and he's maybe familiar with the system or whatever, it's not going to go well, and expectations are going to be elevated. Carolina, to me, is clearly, with the retirement of Luke Kuechly, perhaps moving on from Cam Newton, they're clearly in rebuilding mode. They're not winning a Super Bowl next year, and I'm not even that sure about their offensive line. So that really doesn't make sense, and that's why I say go find you a smart – if you want to continue to play, go find you a smart backup position where you might be able to come in at the end or at some point and unveil a cape and be a hero.
Carolina, not to jump on
you. Do you jump?
Carolina could be an interesting – landing place for him because that's where he played his college ball as well. I think if somebody understands the terrain of North Carolina as a historically strong quarterback, maybe he plays a part.
The hell
in that,
you selling
know?
Newspapers?
I'm just saying.
It's been 20 years since that dude been out there. Then when he had a chance to move, he didn't move back to Carolina. He moved to Florida.
But there's something to be said about it in terms of still his legacy is still.
You know what? There's something to be said about how good he still is. Now everybody's talking about Tom Brady going to Dallas as a starter. Maybe Dak Prescott moves on. Tom Brady last year had a worse season than Phillip Rivers, and Phillip Rivers was disgusting.
Do y'all want to
look at the quarterback?
I just heard blasphemy.
Do y'all
want to
look
at
the quarterback ratings? Because I do.
I got to remind you.
I said a woo, woo, woo. Why is Tom Brady lower than Phillip Rivers and Phillip Rivers'
because
decline?
Because he didn't have Keenan Allen and all the other
stuff. Hey, man, if it was the fifth, we all be lit, brother. But guess what?
Marcellus, you're going to get struck by lightning. The fact that you said that was right. blasphemy from on high.
I'm just getting
Phillip
numbers.
Rivers was a better
hold on. When you use numbers
Brady?
To oh condemn him, it's fine. When I use numbers to uplift him, oh my God, lightning is coming. Why you got to do that, bro?
Where that lightning coming from?
Because
where's your lightning?
The LA Chargers.
Let me explain it. You use the rating. The rating is like accumulation of a bunch of different stats.
Damn right. That's how to go through everything.
I am using the number one. Okay. Second to the scoreboard.
Okay.
The number one most impactful stat that determines an outcome of the
turnover.
Game is turnover.
I'm with you, brother.
And the fact that he was the worst and most careless, I don't care what quarterback you compare him to in terms of rating.
James, what about completion percentage? What about accuracy?
That doesn't matter at this point. Because if you turn the
so
ball
Tom
over.
So Tom Brady can have a worse one than Phillip Rivers, too, and that's
as still long as he doesn't turn the ball over, he's playing better at the quarterback
Brady
position.
Brady didn't have the personnel. And that's the other indictment of Phillip Rivers is everybody thinks, oh, if you plug in the right quarterback, the Chargers can win.
I respect that, and I agree with that. But let's not act like the Chargers didn't have issues. Let's act like their running back wasn't there in the beginning, so they had to go through that transition. Offensive line issues. They lost Derwin James, so the secondary was different. They had, like, almost the measles of issues all around the team. And the constant was Phillip Rivers, who was in decline last year. But to the level of you were a borderline Hall of Famer, if not Hall of Famer, to one bad year, you are now a backup. Come on, man. I can't go that far.
It happens to a lot of people. I want to move on, Brady, because we don't have a lot of time.
Oh, Brady.
Listen, I think as strategy, this would be smart by Dallas to try to lure Phillip Rivers. Again, Michael Irvin's talking about playing hardball and things getting ugly with Dak. Go sign you a veteran quarterback as a backup. That's really playing hardball.
Big dog, I don't know this answer. You ever met Phillip Rivers?
No.
Okay, I could tell. Phillip Rivers is about that life. In a meeting room with 218 million sitting there, with the confidence, belief, and the chatter that Phillip Rivers loves to go out there and participate in, you imagine in that meeting room when Dak is getting the red laser on him and Phillip Rivers is like, I got something to say about that. But I'm going to say that in private. But when we go on that field, it's for public display. Dak throws one interception. People are eating their popcorn looking like, ain't that Phillip Rivers on the sideline? I ain't gonna say nothing yet, but wait. He throws another pick in the same game. Reverse. And guess what? Most backup quarterbacks defuse that. Oh, you know what? I'm just going with the team and all that. Phillip Rivers would add a little gas to that, and his legacy would
be
add more gas. He'd be like,
Phil up.
I think
you know it.
It would be doomsday if you put Phillip Rivers and all that he has in him and what he's accomplished on that sideline.
Mm. There's no question about it, because what I learned about playing against Phillip Rivers is he was extremely petty. And I saw that in his trash talking. And what that meant to me was he enjoyed getting stats, breaking records, more so than just winning games, which you can look at his whole career. I mean, he hasn't won a lot. He's put up a lot of stats.
Damn,
which
Brady?
Only goes to show you where his focus is.
I'm just telling you right now.
What? If you got a guy that cares more about stats than winning games with a young quarterback who you're trying to impress, hey, this is how you play football, that's a bad recipe.
Good point.
I think there's a ton of leverage if you're able to get Phillip Rivers to come to Dallas and on different levels. But just quickly, Phillip Rivers would come in and compete for that starting job.
Yes.
If they could sell him on coming in to compete for the starting job, but being okay as a backup if he doesn't get it, I think it makes for some interesting times.
Well, and I do think that competition may push Dak to another level. And if it does push Dak to another level, you can then try to move Phillip Rivers to a quarterback-needy team, you know, at some point during the season.
Look, Phillip Rivers, I'm talking about he hasn't won 14 wins, 13 wins, 12 wins, 11 wins, 8 winning seasons. Four losing.
How many total?
Eli Manning, who I respect.
Wait, how many?
Shout out to Eli Manning. Saw him at the Super Bowl,
my
dog.
How many total seasons did he play again?
I'm just saying he has a better win percentage than Eli Manning.
So half of his time he won, and half the time
he won more. He actually
got two more Super Bowls.
I didn't ask you for all that. I'm just talking about that's a team accomplishment.
It's a hard comparison.
That's a team accomplishment. But Phillip Rivers is a winning quarterback. He still has something left in the tank. To put him in a backup position, it must be a likability conversation because I don't understand how he played himself into a backup. You know how hard it is to make a team, let alone make a name on a team. That doesn't get taken away easily. One bad year for Phillip Rivers, all of a sudden we throw it away? Really? Not me.
Everybody has to do taxes, and yet not everybody feels comfortable doing taxes, which doesn't seem right. Especially when you consider all the amazing things these same people accomplish every day of their lives. TurboTax believes that with the right tools and encouragement, people can be good at anything. Yes, even taxes. And to help people feel more comfortable with the tax process, TurboTax Live gives you personal access to experienced CPAs and EAs who are there for you even on nights and weekends. And they're happy to go through your return with you line by line to double check that you've done everything right. So you can be sure to get your best possible refund and feel 100% confident in your taxes. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington and Brady Papinga are back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to the Patriots, who have major questions about their future for the first time in a generation. There's been a lot of speculation about whether Bill Belichick will keep Tom Brady around for another year, especially with reports of tension between the coach and quarterback in recent years. But the guy Brady replaced 20 years ago, Drew Bledsoe, says the conflict might not be working against them, saying, quote, "Is there some tension? I'm certain that there is. But that stress and tension can drive attention to detail. It can drive work ethic. Belichick's great at creating that discomfort, and to be honest, I think Tommy thrives on it." Question here is, believe tension with Belichick is part of what makes Tom Brady great?
Nope. I can give you the beginning of his career to get this thing rolling. Get Tom Brady going from a sixth rounder and forgotten in the draft to a game manager to who he became as Tom Brady and certainly now the GOAT. But I can't give you any of this since 2007 when he finally eclipsed 30 touchdown passes and had Randy Moss, and we saw what that looked like. And certainly can't give you anything since TB12. And I'll give you a NASA parallel. I remember a scientist once said, 80% of all the rocket's fuel is used at launch. So because of the combustion, because of the turmoil, because of the issues, you use most of your fuel getting started. But then after that, only 20% for the duration, which could be longer than obviously the takeoff. So my parallel comes back to this. Tom Brady needed some help learning how to take off this plane, but since it's been in takeoff, it's autopilot. He has the discipline. He knows how to go. Belichick puts him in position. He goes out there and executes in that same position. He can now take that somewhere else because he knows what that formula looks like and make it happen anywhere. And I think he's incentivized to do it because he wants to depart from this Belichick and Brady in terms of legacy.
Well, I think absolutely. I disagree with you. It motivated him because it's like, I don't know if you guys have this relationship with your dad, but it's like you want to get your dad's approval.
Yeah.
And if it's constantly that you're not getting his approval, that only motivates you even more to want to get his approval. And Bill Belichick is one of those guys to where he rarely will give any kind of compliment, unless it's like you win the Super Bowl, you do something phenomenal. And I do believe that is a huge factor in the culture of the New England Patriots. And that's what made it to where Brady and him could thrive, because most quarterbacks, big ego quarterbacks always love to hear how good they are, could never thrive in that kind of situation because they couldn't handle that kind of relationship to where, man, I'm not getting complimented every day that I come into work. I'm getting thrown under the bus. And so I believe it was kind of a challenge to Tom to say, hey, let me see if I can go out there and get his approval. And when he did, that's what kind of fed.
I like your analogy. The only thing I would add, though, is I think eventually that type of relationship does lead to a blow up. You know,
well, you get tired, no question.
You know, that was me and my dad's relationship.
Yeah.
Oh, some spark. Personal. We got personal up there. All right.
Barry Sanders.
I'm going to add an analogy myself. It won't be as probably as cool as yours with the dad deal, and it definitely won't be as sophisticated as a natural analogy, but yet nonetheless, I'm going to take a stab.
Go ahead and do that, please.
Thank you.
Take your shot.
I'm saying yes. And the reason why is it's more like a jockey. All right. You get a good jockey out there. A jockey knows when to pull them up, when to let them go, when to hold them back, how to pace it. Where are we at in the race? Are we on the last leg? Are we on the first leg? And I think that that's the relationship that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick has. And I think Bill Belichick has that knowledge with all of his players, even with his coaches. He knows when to push your buttons. He knows when to agitate. He knows when to encourage. He knows when to compromise. I look at the relationship and listening to what Drew Bledsoe said, and I think to myself, man, that adds to me a whole lot of context to what we're watching take place right now. This could be an outright challenge from Bill Belichick to Tom Brady. In what regard? It could possibly just be to come back and give me the best however many fill-in-the-blank seasons that you could possibly give us moving forward. It's possible.
I think Brady is looking for some affirmation and some respect. Mm. And I think he's a bit tired
of
the slave driver dad. And I don't think Bill Belichick has totally properly managed his relationship with Brady.
Yeah, exactly. Tom Brady's like, look, I'm not going to go down in history and you're not going to properly respect me. And right now, he's not being properly respected. How you going to hear you're the GOAT, but then also you only did it because of Belichick in the system? So sometime you have to not be that child to dad and say, I'm my own man. And this is his moment to be his own man. That's why he's in free agency. And Belichick's not his daddy. I don't give a damn how much football you play. My coach is never my daddy. My daddy's my daddy. And he has a daddy who's involved with him and he still talks to on the regular.
Football daddy, though. That's his football daddy.
Okay.
You went back to the beginning. That 80%. Tom Brady was an average quarterback that was never really a starting quarterback in college. I was there. All right. It was greasy. It was Hutchinson. No, it was other guys. It was not Tom Brady. So when you're looking at somebody who turns into the player that he's turned into, it's not because he was always great.
We don't have to always be great.
So
that's
when
the
you
problem
look at,
with this example.
But he's back. He's back.
We keep
in the
saying
position.
That he's plugged into the lifeline.
He is back
he
into
needs
the position.
Belichick for the umbilical cord.
Because
like, I can cut
his,
it. It's time for me to go.
Because of his age and where he is currently at in his career, he is almost in essence in the starting point of where he was at when he came into the National Football League, which means that Bill Belichick's opinion of him matters at this point.
Hell no. Let me say this.
80%.
All parents out there, your job is to build the hardware into your child. That means give them the structure, give them the understandings, and then let life give them software. And you can apply any software to the hardware that you built, and it's going to be able to function. And if this is his football daddy, it's time to see if the software is going to apply in L.A. with the Chargers.
Joined now by Fox NBA analyst Rick Bucher and USA Today NBA reporter Mark Medina. Let's move to Philadelphia, where the 76ers have failed to live up to the massive expectations this year, currently sitting at fifth place in the East. There's been a lot of talk about the Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons combination not coming together the way the team had hoped. And now, according to ESPN's Brian Windhorst, other teams are preparing for the possibility that Philly could end up trading Embiid. Will the 76ers trading Joel Embiid be the right move?
No, not at all. Let's just rewind to last year this time and look at the NBA landscape and our projections, and did they actually turn out as expected? No, they didn't. No one saw Toronto being that. Everyone said, okay, outside chance, and that was being nice and courteous to them. So I look at this situation as simply like an investment. trust the process was an investment. Patience, we're going to invest in this young core and we're going to tank and then have these new assets and we're going to let them fully blossom. And since this is an investment, let's talk in financial terms. Unrealized gains and realized gains. What have they realized? They, if they were to get rid of Embiid right now, would stop short of that full investment coming to maturation. So I can't imagine the Philadelphia 76ers winning the championship without both of those guys. So why would I trade one of them? Now, I would look to move someone, and it would be the coach. But I digress. In his seventh year with this with this core, not getting all that he should out of them, but that's for a different conversation. Yeah.
They've had a tremendous amount of success collectively. We sometimes miss that. I mean, they have won and they've made playoff runs, but at the heart of it, these two pieces do not fit together. The key to any championship team is that your core players make each other better. These guys are better when one of them's missing. That's just the reality. That's what we've seen. It's also a bad move because Ben Simmons is going to get you more on the trade market than Joel Embiid is. Yeah. And that's, since this came up, I checked with a couple GMs because I was curious about which one would gain more. But Joel Embiid, because of his injury history and because of his volatile personality, shall we say, is not going to get you as much. It's also a bad move in my mind because Joel Embiid is the better all-around player. I can make a case where Joel Embiid is the best player at his position. I can make a case that he is Tim Duncan with a three-point shot, skill-wise. Ben Simmons, am I going to say that he's the best point guard in the game? No chance. Is he even in the conversation without a three-point shot? I can't say that. So for me, if I'm going to split these two, and I don't have a problem splitting them, but if I'm going to split them, I'm going to send Ben out, and I'm going to build around Embiid.
Yeah, and philosophically, the thing that makes this more challenging is I think on the surface in today's NBA, you want a Ben Simmons type of player that can make plays, but he doesn't have a consistent jump shot. I am very confident that Joel Embiid can stay healthy moving forward, but I don't know if he can be that Giannis or that guy that can be a consistent stretch five.
Mark, you're not a doctor, but I know you slept at a Holiday Inn.
Oh, of course. Of course. What do you look? The last 4 years.
I'm very confident he's going to be healthy. All right. Okay.
That's the thing. That's a huge factor, right? I think the larger point is, what is he going to be in today's NBA? Mm. It doesn't matter how the analytics are. He's still going to dominate as a rim protector and a pick and roll guy. But as far as being that consistent stretch five, I'm not too sold on that part.
Yeah, I don't think I would trade Embiid. I'd probably get rid of Ben Simmons just because Ben Simmons, I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that could knock down three-point shots, and you got to do that in the NBA.
Well, we saw Jason Kidd evolve.
We did.
Jason Kidd would take the shot.
Okay, why take it if you know you're going to miss it?
We've seen Lonzo Ball evolve. Yeah. We've seen Giannis Antetokounmpo evolve. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen Ben Simmons evolve. We've seen Markelle Fultz evolve. Ben has not taken a single step in that direction. He missed his entire rookie year. There was the opportunity. Yeah. Then he came out and played his rookie year, and the one thing that he was missing was the jump shot. Mm. Like, when's it going to happen? Yes, it can happen, but it hasn't happened. That's been the most, I'll tell you, honestly, beguiling thing that I have seen is that he doesn't have one.
All right, let's move to a team that just got rid of their big man, the Rockets, who have gone centerless after trading away Clint Capela. Houston beat the Lakers in their first game after turning the small ball, but have now lost two straight, including to the lowly Suns. Even so, General Manager Daryl Morey says the move gives them, quote, the best chance to win, and that the team is excited about the new approach. Is the Rockets' new approach smart or desperate?
I think it's smart. I think you have to just look at their results coming up short when they went all in before in the playoffs and realizing that we need to maximize James Harden but activate others during this process. So what do? You go small ball. One, that's going to give them better spacing because the bigs are not going to close out well. You're going to have other guys who can hit the three-point shot, which is obviously their mantra. And more importantly, you don't go out there with this finger of James Harden's greatness. You go out there with a fist of guys who feel like they're all involved and they all have a chance. And look, James Harden in 47 games played this year had two triple-doubles, talking about rounding out his game. And then they go small ball, and for three games – he He already has one triple-double in terms of rounding out his game. He struggled the first time. He didn't see it coming, it felt like. Russell Westbrook misses the second game. So it's too small a sample size. But I like the fact that, hey, let's zig when everyone else is zagging. And we saw what the Warriors did with their depth lineup. Maybe they try to replicate that.
Yeah, I think it's smart and desperate. I think it's a little too ambitious. I talked with Daryl Morey shortly after the trade, and he was saying, look, we're comfortable beating the Lakers. We think we have what it takes to beat them. Maybe in a regular season game, one playoff game, as far as a series, barring health, no. But I think when you're looking at Clint Capella, he's a great player, but he's not going to be the last line of defense against a LeBron, an AD, a Paul George, or a Kawhi Leonard. So why not muck up a series and tap into what you do well, which is shoot the three ball well, get up and down the floor. And I think that that could be enough to be a speed bump against either of those teams, but it's not going to be enough to upset them in the playoffs.
Can I throw a third option in here? It's
What's
convenient. It's convenient to say that this is the way that they want to play because Capella was costing them too much money. They wanted to get off of his money. And so they fully believed that whether it was Tristan Thompson or Scalabissier on the buyout market, that they were going to get another cheaper version of Clint Capella. This wasn't by design, it was by necessity. So they're making the best of it. Is it the ideal? Are they reinventing the wheel? No.
You're making my point then. It's pure desperation. They've held on to Mike D'Antoni forever. This to me seems like, well, let's try one more thing to see if Mike D'Antoni can get us over the hump. And we made this big move for Russell Westbrook. It doesn't make sense. Let's come up with an offense that hopefully justifies this move for Russell Westbrook. It's all desperation. It's not, there was nobody sitting in a room going, ha, I discovered
right.
it. This is what we need to do. It's all by necessity, as
but
you say.
There's power and there's genius at times in unintended consequences.
True.
Let's be real.
Like, true.
How much of our life is just by design that we've benefited? And how much is like, oh, I didn't do that, but guess what? Or I did this and I didn't see that coming. So I'm not mad at them for the original thought not being this, but they're here.
Right.
And all of a sudden, Russell Westbrook is now a power forward. And he's not that by size, he's that by tenacity.
Sure.
He goes in there with the bigs and is like, I don't care. I'm not respecting your space. I'm coming at you. 41 points, 39 points, good field goal percentage in both outings since they went small ball. And then Harden is all of a sudden saying, oh, I could go roundabout and everyone's going to have their proper space. I'm more with you. It's a speed bump, but it's a fighting chance versus the other way we know they were going to be at now.
Right. I feel like the Rockets this past year have been making moves to correct the mistakes of before, but it leads to new issues. So, for example, I think they made the right move with trading Chris Paul because he and James Harden were on the same page. There was the injury concerns that Chris Paul was facing in recent years. But with Russell Westbrook, as much as they may have solved the on-court dynamic and given the team a new look with pace, he can't shoot the ball.
Yeah.
And so here they might address the weakness of Clint's consistency on defense, but when you don't have a center, you can't really do much in the NBA.
LeVar Arrington and Rick Bucher are back with us. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's move to America's favorite dad, LeVar Ball, who's up to his old tricks. In the latest episode of his reality show, Ball and the Family, LeVar actually suggested to Lonzo that he and LaMelo should put all their money back into the relaunch of his Big Baller brand. Check this out.
As a family, we just got to stick together. Like, okay, we good. Put your money over there. Put my money over here. So put his money over there. Melo over here. We put all our money together. That's where the venture capitalists come in and say, we got 100 mil for y'all. We don't need to have 100 mil. We got it right here if we put our together.
Man, the media was talking about some bull the other day. They said, ma'am, LeVar, you need to be just a father. I said, what is me and Zo supposed to talk about? I said, I ain't never talked to about no birds and the bees and all that. I said, I talked to him about two things, Big Baller brand and basketball.
Y'all stop.
All right, I want to ask you guys, should LeVar Ball just focus on being a father?
Yeah, that would be great. he might have to read a book first about it.
Wow.
I mean, the man just said, I talked to him about basketball and Big Baller brand.
Yeah.
Sounds like a business manager.
Yeah.
That sounds like an agent.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, but never shut up. Read my book. Let me say this. I think what he was saying is part of being a father. We got to respect the latitude of what a father is supposed to instill in his kid. And some of that, if not a lot of that, needs to be uncomfortable because it's more uncomfortable to face that in the real world. Now, what he's saying is fine as a father. How he's going to go about what he's saying is the issue. You have to hire smart people who are in that lane of business that can make the conversion of your image, your fame, and turn it into greater fortune. If not, just stay talking basketball because that's the best lane for Lonzo. If you're going to try to convert that into a business, you need to understand a lot more than just, hey, he's famous and we got T-shirts on. That was the failure for the first round. So I'm not mad at him as a father because I wish my father was one of experience to talk about more things and two, deeper in those experiences so we can go uncomfortable into those moments. I wish I knew what a CPA was until I hired one. I wish I was in a situation trying to convert what I became into something greater for generational wealth. But my father, who's an amazing father, would only want to talk about the Cowboys, not even me playing football, the Cowboys and practical issues of day to day in terms of being a good person. Anything else like that, let's talk about girls. I don't know, what do you want to talk about them for? Leave them alone. Like, I'm loving the fact that even if he makes a misstep, he is at least daring enough to go to those places.
One of the greatest lessons I've learned when it comes to being a parent is that it's not just what I say. It's as important that I listen as I speak. And this is what stuck out to me, is that he says, I talk to him about basketball and Big Baller Brand. Not I talk with him about basketball and Big Baller Brand. He doesn't care what Lonzo or LaMelo think. So he doesn't know where they're coming from. And we all saw it. We were all laughing. You saw the look on Lonzo's face. He can talk all he wants about the grand plans. It could be the greatest business plan ever. Lonzo's not having any of that. So the first thing you have to be able to do is communicate and open up a dialogue with your kids in order to get anywhere. That's clearly not what LeVar has right now. So whether he's going to be a father or not a father, he's got to figure out how to have a relationship one way or another with his kids.
Yeah, should his focus be on being a father? Is that the question? I say he doesn't have to solely. He does not have to solely focus.
Is there something more important?
Is it more important? Yes, it is.
Is there something more important than being
a father? The first priority is to be a present and productive father. But does he have to limit himself to just being a father? I say no. And here's what I'll offer, just a different perspective and a point of view. When I look at LeVar Ball, and I've done a lot of looking because I have to hear his name probably more than anybody else, all right?
LeVar,
right? So I've come to realize that he's only got really one entertaining son that doesn't come across as introverted. All right. And I look at LaMelo as he's the one that can carry a room or bring some personality. Lonzo is a quiet guy, unassuming. The real LeVar Ball, this is my assumption, the real LeVar Ball is a strong, steadfast dad. It's not present for us to see. It's not present for us to dissect and analyze. He does this purely for entertainment and brand building. And regardless of if you agree with it or if you disagree with it, he will carry their brand and he carries it by trying to create a brand with the Big Baller Brand connected to it. They go with it. That's why they're all on the show. So I look at him as he does prioritize being a father. When he says things like, I talk to them about those things, I really think that the man has figured out a way to keep his personal life and business with his kids personal, and that's why they support
man,
him.
I'm sorry.
That's what I think.
I got it, but man, this show is fearless, and it's about keeping it real, and we got to judge on the facts. Lonzo's looking at his dad like, man, I got to put up with this again. And to me, this is their level of support for, Dad, we're going to go along with your little Facebook show. But in terms of getting all our money all tied up in Big Baller Brand, that you really haven't demonstrated any professional, any skill, expertise, anything, we're good. We're going to help you with your little Facebook show. We'll come on here and we'll put up with this. But I sit here and I'm just keeping it real and I'm not trying to beat up on LeVar. LeVar's probably well-intentioned, but my father was somewhat wealthy at some points and then flat on his ass broke at some point. And the number one things I remember are the little life lessons he taught me that didn't have a damn thing to do with athletics, didn't have a damn thing to do with much of anything, just taught me one of the number one stories, me and my dad sitting on a couch in our little 400 square foot apartment, walked me through why his best friend, who was James Slim Carruthers, one of the biggest players, ballers, wealthy guys in the hood in Indianapolis, wanted him to go to Vegas for a Tyson fight. And my father's like, nah, I ain't doing it because Slim Carruthers was going to have to carry the financial weight. And my father taught me, he told me this story, to tell you, he goes, there's a responsibility when you accept something from anybody. People always just say, oh, someone gave me something. Mm. And my father was like, no, there's a responsibility when you accept something. And I'm not letting this man carry me out to Mike Tyson in a Vegas fight on his dime. I'm going to do for me. And if I can't do it, I ain't doing it.
But that's his dad.
No, that's his friend.
You're talking about his friend.
I'm talking about my dad, but I'm talking about the lessons. He told me this story, just me and him. I just listened to a man say, I talked to my son about basketball and Big Baller Brand, and it breaks my heart. Mm. This is not what young black men or any child needs from their father. Basketball and Big Baller Brand, there are so many things a father can impart to a child that I'm 52, and this conversation happened when I was 17. I think about it all the time when people offer me things and I say no, and people are like, why are you doing that? So there's a responsibility. And again, people don't understand that. It's like when a young lady gives you something that you desire and want, there's a responsibility that goes along with that. Be careful just accepting anything that's offered to you.
I understand that, but what you're saying is a different relationship, but let's find a common ground here. We can't make full assumption that this is the only way that he has conversations.
You gotta take him at his word.
But no, you're taking him at his entertainment value.
That's the show.
And that could be shtick. And let's just be real about this. As you said, Rick, kids don't learn as much from what you say, but what you do.
Yes.
And LeVar, fortunately and unfortunately, only learned such a bandwidth by what he saw. And I know about that because I'm from the same neighborhood as him and his family. Now, what that means is we got to look at this situation and be smarter about it. We have to start to learn, hire people around you. Let's stop with this whole, let's have all of nothing instead of some of something. Mm-hmm. Smart people will come in and say, I need 10%. But guess what? You are going to be in a better position. But he's fighting that because basically where he's from, he's like, they only here to rob and they only showed up when you became something. So the family got us here. The family would get us there. I'm here to tell him there are people you can trust that are more intelligent in the lanes that you want to go be a part of, but you got to trust in it. Until now, he didn't have this issue. But now he does, and if he doesn't employ better people, his son's gonna keep looking at him side-eye.
Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, joined again by LeVar Arrington and Rick Bucher. Time now for the most fearless discussion of the day. Let's return to the Gayle King, Snoop Dogg, Kobe Bryant controversy. Yesterday on this show, I offered the opinion that King and Snoop could find common ground if they both channeled the positive, classy energy Kobe Bryant tapped into post-retirement. Gayle King and Snoop Dogg form a real-life version of the meme that has two Spider-Men pointing accusatory fingers at each other. Here's what's even more ironic. Kobe Bryant provides a blueprint for the solution. Kobe Bryant embraced the responsibility of being a role model and carrying himself in a manner that brought respect to himself and black men. Right now, all parties, at best, look like hypocritical clout chasers. All right, Marcellus posted my full commentary on his Instagram page, and Snoop posted an interesting and positive response, saying, quote, "We good, cuz. I'm grown. I know how to handle all my misunderstandings. I appreciate y'all, but hit me next time to get my full perspective. Remember what's the focus, the legacy of Kobe Bryant, my friend and family member, peace and love." I legitimately believe Snoop's intentions were and are positive. He founded the SYFL, Snoop Youth Football League, a league similar to the one we celebrated Super Bowl week in Miami, run by rapper Luther Campbell. Snoop has a sincere passion for developing young men. His style of rap music contradicts and mutes that passion, but it does not eliminate his desire to be a force for good. I think, and I could be wrong here, but I think Snoop would like to publicly apologize to Gayle King and challenge her to use her platform to uplift black boys and men. But he's trapped by the rap music brand that made him rich and famous. Gangster rappers, even old ones, who are friends with Martha Stewart and make gospel music, don't apologize for their transgressions. It's too risky. It opens too many other questions, such as, in this case, are you using your platform to uplift black boys and men? Brand is an enemy of humanity. Brand benefits corporations and inhibits human evolution. Allegiance to brand is stopping Gayle King and Snoop Dogg from aligning together to work for the good of their people. All right, Marcel, let's get us rolling here. You think Snoop's brand is preventing him from publicly apologizing to Gayle King?
No, I don't think it's because of his brand. I don't know a celebrity that has more latitude in terms of their brand than Snoop Dogg. Mm. Man, let's do it. I met Snoop Dogg through my headphones on Slauson and Normandy when I was listening to Deep Cover for the first time. And I was like, I live vicariously through gangster rap at that age, not impressionable by the lyrics, but just like, oh, these are my circumstances, but that's how you chose to deal with them. So a gangster rapper who has a cooking show now with Martha Stewart that is DJing gospel rapping and that will teach your kids how to tackle.
Don't forget it, reggae.
And reggae is not a guy that is like restricted by brand. I will say that. But I'm not into the conversation of telling someone to say sorry, because I think it robs them of the potential sincerity that you need to come to that place yourself. So I don't know if Snoop, and I don't know if a lot of people from not only our culture, but our subculture respects the two reasons I've learned to say sorry. And growing up, I only knew one. The only reason I said sorry growing up is because I was wrong. But then I got older and more mature and saw more and experienced more and realized that you also can say sorry if you make someone feel bad. Mm. If you just contributed in any regard to them not feeling at their best. And now I incorporate those two. But I'm not going to force Snoop to get to that place, because Snoop has to arrive there himself and he has to feel that conviction. Maybe he doesn't feel like he wronged her, or that she should feel wronged by what he said, because he spoke his truth.
Right.
And what is his truth? This is the thing that I don't know if a lot of people are talking about, but this is the issue with the Kobe Bryant situation, why it's so much going on with it. One, people don't want Snoop to disrespect Gayle because he felt that she disrespected Kobe's legacy. You don't fight fire with fire. But Snoop is like, yo, I'm defending Kobe Bryant's name because it wasn't properly litigated post-trial. His name was dragged through the mud without really a counterbalance in those moments. And let's talk about those moments. The evidence report suggested that maybe she stopped short of going through the trial and he wasn't convicted. Not only not convicted, but innocent. But not only that, maybe falsely accused. So you got Snoop sitting there saying, my man may have been falsely accused, and we are now going to litigate this. We didn't do it when he was alive. We didn't do it post-trial. And now we're going to do it when he doesn't have a defense because he's gone.
Yeah.
And that's where I think all the energy is coming from. I'm not saying that Snoop needs to apologize. I just don't like calling people out their name when you disagree.
But before you go, Rick, you've made a hell of a point, because a lot of people, I've had deep conversations with Ray Lewis.
Oh, my man.
With Ray Lewis.
Saw him Friday with Snoop. I saw him and Snoop together on Friday.
I have a deep understanding from Ray's perspective of what happened in Atlanta.
Say it.
And he's convinced me, like, oh, people are out here acting and reacting to bad information and don't really know what's going on. And that same feeling that Snoop may have about Kobe, I have about Ray Lewis.
And I saw Ray Lewis the night that all went down, White Mink. I was with Ray Lewis that night, but don't. Let's not go there, but that's the point. I know exactly where you're coming from.
So, yeah, I believe that Snoop has apologized. He just did it through you. He wasn't doing it directly to Gayle, but his saying that there were misunderstandings, he's already recategorizing what went on between him and Gail, that there was a misunderstanding of what she was saying and what he was saying. Well, so he mistook why she said what she said or why she asked the question and what her intention was. And so that, and that makes sense to me. Sometimes we can't go directly and apologize to someone, but I'm going to say, you know what? Mm. I feel really bad about what I said to LeVar. Mm. Knowing that LeVar is going to find out that what I said, that I feel badly about it, and I feel that there was a misunderstanding there. I'm 100% with you. I don't think his brand gets in the way because he's a game show host. He's yeah. on a cooking channel. Like, he doesn't have to defend that rap status, but there's also a matter of, like, this is very much a divided issue still. There are people that feel like what Snoop said, there was merit in what he said. And on the other hand,
no merit in the way he said it, but I get
what he went too far. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then there are people who are saying that he ultimately went too far and he attacked Gail. And just as a distinction, regardless of how it went down, to ask the question of that incident affecting Kobe's legacy, whether he was completely innocent or whatever it was, the fact of the matter is that it was something that happened, and how do you resolve that with everything else that we've seen Kobe become? That's still something that merits being asked when we look at the fullness of how we think of Kobe Bryant.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think his brand impacts him wanting to issue an apology, and I think some of the information, I guess, in terms of the wound is still very open and it's very fresh on what took place. And I don't think that that has even been really discussed in the whole, you know, entirety of the conversation. If there were one thing that I would look at, and you touched on it, if there were one thing I'd look at and say, just from my dealings and knowing who Snoop is, knowing that he's a dope influential leader to our young guys. I mean, being a coach at Long Beach, seeing him and how he interacts with the guys and the respect level, him being a granddad at this point, not just a dad, but being a granddad, it would probably have been the way that he presented it, the presentation of what he said. If there would be anything that I'd look at, and if me and Snoop was rapping right now, I'd be like, do you regret possibly the way, you know, we coming for you or calling her out of her name in a disrespectful manner? Would you apologize? Would you have felt some way about that? Knowing the type of person he is, 100%, that would be the one thing. Mm. But let's not get out of context, right? The context of his message still remains. That's not what he would be apologizing. To me, this is my interpretation. I don't think he would be apologizing for what he said.
It's how he said it.
No question.
But it would certainly be how some of the things that he presented and how he said it.
And I, trying to walk a fine line, have defended the intent behind his message, because I do think there need to be some challenges issued that direction. Mm. And if he had... you know what? I'm going to criticize and say if he had said it a different way, we would be having that discussion. But we actually are having that discussion.
Yeah, we are.
And it's because I'm just telling you, the point you made has blown me away, because I'm telling you, when people say crazy things about Ray Lewis, I get emotional.
Uh-huh.
And because I have, one, I know what he does in the Baltimore community. I know where his heart really is. And it's like, No, I don't really think you understand the situation. And so I can see where Snoop is coming from, but I said this over social media yesterday. We have to figure out a way, particularly as black people and black men and women, to engage, disagree, and find a way to common ground and be respectful towards
each other. You know what? There was a woman, Rice, that
Susan Rice
came back and threatened Snoop. And I don't get why she did it.
Same reasons why.
But again,
I will defend Ray Lewis.
It was no, but there's Kobe. there's no real differentiator in how outraged she was and how she came at Snoop and how outraged Snoop was because of how they came at Kobe. So to me, what you're saying has so much merit and validity to it, because can we communicate better than that? Like, why would Rice come out and say what she said? I don't see people jumping up in arms like, can you believe she said we got an army and you'll lose Snoop? Like, you're turning it into a whole nother set of issues coming out of one
singular issue that could have been resolved with one singular conversation.
And the pendulum of ethics continues to swing. And that's why it's so important to get to the second level of apology, because it, when you make someone feel bad, when you call someone out their name, it's okay to say, I'm sorry. When you call me or Whitlock or Uncle Tom a sellout just because you disagree about our stance on any issue that affects our community, then you are not enlightened fully. So I'm going to help you, because we see the lack of understanding and empathy that happens. Gail King to Kobe's legacy. We thought that that was not sensitive. Then Snoop responds with the fire to that fire and goes at Gail King, and then the pendulum of ethics continues to swing. Here's one thing I want everyone to know, and I'm going to stay behind the veil with this. Snoop and many other person out there, people out there are saying that we have seen black men killed over false accusation. This is what they're saying. And Kobe is dead. Don't kill his name and honor over false accusation. And then they go dot, 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 because sister, you should know better. And we didn't have a proper form and a proper platform to discuss Kobe in counterbalance post-Colorado. People ran into their factions. Either quietly you believed, hey, Kobe didn't do that, and the evidence reports can support that. And then other people were public and chanting and saying, you know what? Kobe did that. Why would you settle? Why would you pay? Why would you make the apology? But in reality, it's a blend of those things that can come together in a mature way without always taking to name-calling and also other demeaning ways to not hear that full point.
Brady Papinga's back. Let's move to our guy, Michael Strahan, who we all know holds the NFL season sack record with 22 and a half. But the guy whose record he broke, former Jet Mark Gastineau, is now says the record should still be his, and that Strahan tarnished the record with the final sack of that season coming on what some people thought was a dive by Brett Favre. All right, Marcellus, what do we think Mark Gastineau's motivation is here?
I think he feels like he got robbed, and who wants to get robbed? And not just in the present, but forevermore, because his legacy took a huge hit because he lost the one record that we will always associate with his name, and we did for so many years. I want to correct him in saying that I don't think that Brett Favre took a dive.
Thank you.
Brett Favre was like, I'm not taking this hit.
Thank you.
It's a big difference. Leaving the huddle saying, okay, you know, we're going to get this. Oh, and if you watch the play, and I've watched it from the Y22, they were doing run action bootleg, and guess what Strahan was thinking? My record. And he just said, abort the run play. Bubba Franks, my dog, sitting there. Yeah, that's what happened. So I'm sorry, Gastineau. You didn't get robbed here. You're just going to have to accept it.
Well, I'm sorry. I hate to break to everybody. I've talked to Brett Favre about that play.
Ooh.
And guess what he said?
What?
He basically gave it to him.
Oh, don't lie to me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I asked him straight up. I go, Brett, did you give Michael Strahan that sack? And he goes, and walks away. Which that to me is like,
no,
come
that
on.
Ain't it. That
oh,
ain't
I know,
it.
Brett.
I don't buy it.
I know Brett is good. Yeah, and I was like, I no, got you, Brett.
I don't buy
it. Got
Peyton
you.
Manning's given up that sack a million times.
Every time.
A million times.
Well, why do you think the Giants went and celebrated around Favre after he broke the record? Because they're saying, thanks, Favre, for helping our guy out.
Look, that dude was going to. Mike Strahan was getting that sack. If he had completed the play, Mike Strahan was going to take his head off.
Did you see Bubba Franks' effort in
Yo,
blocking?
I'm not lying. Guys, just, he changed I'm my telling. Lens. Everybody was doing run action.
Exactly.
And Bubba kind of came out with some old happy pass happy.
I actually heard Brett tell the story, Ooh. How they talked about it in the huddle. Ooh. So I'm just telling you, he added all it together. He never absolutely said, yes, I gave him a sack.
Ooh.
But it wasn't like, no, man, that was just a good play.
I don't know that blocking formation that Bubba's
But let's get
doing.
Back to the question. Let's get back to Mark Gastineau. Here's the thing. Mark, you're a phenomenal guy. Don't let one sack change your self-image. And that's what I believe this is. A lot of guys get caught up
yeah.
in who they are as a player, and they forget who they are as people.
Yeah, I get
and
that.
And they have that basically determine their self-value. And I believe right now he's holding on to something that
I'm going
to really
tell you what this is all about. It's about the Hall of Fame.
Ooh,
he's looking at people get into the Hall of Fame, and he's like, well, hold on, man. I had the sack record. I was 5-time Pro Bowler. 3-time first-team All-Pro, 2-time second-team All-Pro,
mm-hmm.
and Harold Carmichael just got into the Hall of Fame, and his Pro Bowls and All Pros don't stack up to mine.
Yeah.
I think Gastineau may have been on the All-Decade team of the 70s or somewhere close, or maybe even second team.
80s.
Yeah. And so I think this is about the Hall of Fame. And he feels like if he had that sack record, he would have a hell of a case for the Hall of Fame.
Mm.
And what happens with the guys at his age, there's a bunch of money to be made. With that gold jacket. Yeah. That's a hell of a retirement package, and he wants it.
And he played before they started to count sacks, so he has those few years, even though he didn't have a lot of sacks. But then when he did, 19, 22, and 13 and a half, and he's basically, I love that. You guys are both right. He wants to get in, and he's like, look, I have enough of the numbers. You're talking about a guy that had 74 career sacks by today's standards wouldn't get you in, but because of what they meant in those days and he had the record, makes sense. And now you convince me.
And literally, I think this is a play to get his name back into the public.
Okay.
And to start a conversation. Let's give him a Hall of Fame. We won't give him the sack record, but if we put him in the Hall of Fame.
Hey, yeah.
It's a good consolation.
But three seasons enough for a Hall of Fame status with the sack record? That's
Gale Sayers, Terrell Davis.
Mm.
In his mind, there's a lot of guys that, you know, think they should be in the Hall of Fame. He's another. Uncle Jimmy's here to talk about our approval ratings for Phillip Rivers, but first,
you know.
Oh, what's your big dummy of the day?
Big dummy of the day goes to the person that said that happiness is attached to expectations.
Yeah, twice he said that. I like
that. Is that for you or her?
I have no idea.
Which one said that?
All right, let's talk Phillip Rivers, who was looking for a new team after the Chargers decided to move on after 16 seasons.
Is that it?
Rivers has put up some huge numbers throughout his career, but he's also completely underachieved in the postseason. Marcellus, you think Rivers is a Hall of Famer?
Hell yeah. Top 10 passing
yards.
Top 10 passing touchdowns. Top 10 passer rating all time. If you top 10 in your sport all time, you are a Hall of Famer, especially if you have the second most starts in NFL history at the position. Yes, Hall of Famer.
I believe he should be inducted into the San Diego Chargers Hall of Fame.
The Ring of Honor?
in their Hall of Fame. They should be immortalized in San Diego as one of the great quarterbacks of all time. The second best San Diego Charger quarterback.
Greatest dad, though.
All right, Uncle Jimmy.
Gang of kids.
You have any thoughts on Phillip Rivers?
No love for Phillip.
What we have here is a classic case of projectile stammering. This is a form of psychosis that affects the neurological neurons to which the patient projects his innermost insecurities onto a totally unsuspecting human being.
This could be deep.
See, your little soliloquy earlier about Phillip Rivers?
Yeah.
That's a classic example.
Of what?
See, it reveals a very, very disturbing phenomenon inside your little twisted psyche. In other words, boy, you burnt up. You crazy. Or here, let me break it down in food terms for you. Boy, you a few French fries shy of a Happy Meal. Stupid. Look, and you can't say that you don't resemble the remarks made about you and Phillip Rivers. The similarities are uncandidly. Douglas?
I'm listening.
Travel with me.
All right, let's go.
Now, I know it's going to be a little scary, but we going to go into the deep recesses of my nephew's disease-infilled mind.
I'm out.
Now, he said Phillip Rivers shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Right. He a lot closer to getting to the Hall of Fame than he is into getting into Tamara Hall's of Fame. Phillip Rivers spent 16 years at the Chargers and was unceremoniously released. Just like my nephew spent 16 years in Kansas City. Before being involuntarily separated.
Yeah, get him.
You said Phillip Rivers' percentage completion ratio is at an all-time low.
Mm.
Hey, who threw more incompletions in Miami than you? You talking about Phillip Rivers and his strange release motion. I have to tell you, I ain't never seen a stranger release motion than you taking out running during last week's show to go to the toilet. The good news is, look, you ain't hopeless, despite of what your mama say. Okay?
Dang.
Look, look here, in true projectile stamina and fashion, look here, you projected your own cure onto Phillip Rivers. What'd you say? You said he needs to go to Dallas and take a backup role.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, you got a first stringer right here. Unsigned. Well, maybe you need to take a pay cut and come sit on the bench behind me for a while. Mm. Hey, me and Darkless can handle it. Okay?
You sure?
I'm telling you.
You doing Whitlock?
We got this.
You ain't doing no Whitlock, right?
We call it Too Dark and Lovely.
All the smoke for real.
For real,
I got Phillip Rivers.
Cut that on lighting.
58. role player right
58?
Now.
58?
Yeah.
Wow.
Drop 3 points, 58 role player.
Mm.
Not quite GOAT status.
Man, he's an all-star, and that's Hall of Fame level if he just finishes out his career without going too much more into decline. But I give you the roses while you can still smell them. All-star.
All right, the internet agrees with you, Marcellus.
Give him his
67%
roses.
All-star.